The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. This is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Whenever you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You got your, a burgundy quarter zip?
Yeah, a little quarter zip, yeah.
A little burgundy and gold later in the week from Kelly. Who knows? Thanks for joining us this morning. We got a good show. Drew Densick returns once again to the program. Double dip with Drew, who does the deep dive and the Bet the Edge podcast. We'll talk NFL wild card, super wild card weekend, that is, with him momentarily. Todd Wright, the greatest sports radio host there ever was, to talk about super wild card weekend as well. Maybe some tennis with Drew. We'll see. I don't know if he's betting any. Drew and I doing an Australian Open pod pre-draw tomorrow. Then Zach Cohen with the post-draw on Friday.
Ooh, I like it.
Not to mention a megapod with Cleve T.A., Will, Todd, and I. So, big podcast week as well. And then later on the show, Samo bombing with Mike Somich, Will Hill. They'll be here. We'll talk Super Bowl exactas, NFL draft number one. By the way, both Samo bomb and Will, see what their plays are for the college football semifinals as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, all of that coming up on the show. I just wanted to, start today because... You know, what's your relationship with the ESPN show, Pardon the Interruption? Do you still watch that show at all?
Occasionally, I feel like it's impossible to always avoid it. it's you and I have texted a couple times. It's taken on a life of its own now with Michael Wilbon,
yes.
Just old man hating on everything.
He's got the Lombardi anti-analytic stance on everything. He wedges it into everything.
It's betting odds don't matter. Don't tell me who a favorite is. I don't care.
I don't care what Vegas says. Right. So there was a time in my life where I watched it religiously.
Yes.
But yes, you're right. Now it's sort of like, oh, something was on before this. Look, PTI's on kind of thing. So yesterday I happened to catch 90 seconds of it. And Tony Kornheiser, who does not have a vote in any NFL awards, they just brought up randomly Offensive Rookie of the Year. And so I'm sitting here thinking, you know, Jaden Daniels is going to win this thing. But again, sometimes we are too close to the sun on things. So I think it's worthwhile bringing up that Kornheiser and Wilbon had their brief little exchange. Kornheiser believes that Knicks and Jaden Daniels is a toss-up. And so when pressed on the matter, he's like, I'd call it a push and I'd vote for Brock Bowers. And so it got me to thinking, I was like, maybe we should probably revisit this for a second. We're absolutely sure Jaden Daniels is winning Offensive Rookie of the Year, right? Right?
Yes.
I am, I think. But it's going to be, let's put it this way, it's going to be a lot closer than I thought it would be. And because I thought it would be unanimous. So it's not going to be unanimous. It's going to be closer-ish. Let's put it that way.
Well, who comes in second? I guess that's the bigger question to me. I think he's, look, Daniels, and we're going to roll through some of these awards here, but Daniels didn't even listen anymore. Like, Offensive Rookie of the Year, I didn't see a DraftKings
no
or
betting
fan. You can't even bet on it.
Well, the difference between MVP, which is a de facto quarterback award, you can compare stats, right? Because they're all playing the same position if you believe that it's going to a quarterback no matter what. Rookie of the Year, you've got wide receivers and tight ends. Like, again, Brian Thomas Jr., great year for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Brock Bowers, record year for the for Raiders as a tight end. And then you have Knicks and Jaden Daniels. And if you put their stats side by side, they're actually pretty similar. But Jaden, of course, has about five ridiculous endings to games. And that's kind of the tiebreaker, I think.
Let him teams to the playoffs, which we don't see often.
They both went to the playoffs. But Jaden led it, you know, as a savior for a moribund franchise. There's a whole bunch of things. Anyway, Bill Barnwell put out a piece yesterday where he started ranking. He has a ballot. He's an actual voter. And he did go for Rookie of the Year, and this is my Offensive Rookie of the Year. This might surprise you in the other direction. He went Brian Thomas Jr. 3, Brock Bowers 2, Jaden Daniels 1. Bo Nix not even in the top 3. So it's amazing how opinions on all of this. Again, let's just agree. Not only are there not enough awards to go around this year, but within the same award.
It's a stacked rookie class. Like, that's like, we're going to talk MVP here in a second. Like, it's two amazing quarterbacks there. But this rookie class, you could make a case for a lot of these guys. I mean, Kiel, I don't even know if I realize this. I just pulled up receiving yards leaders. Do you realize that three of the top eight guys are rookies?
Yeah.
Three of
it's
the
incredible.
Top eight receiving yards in the NFL belong to rookies this year.
Malik Nabers being the third in there as well, right?
Yeah, Brian Thomas Jr., third in the NFL in receiving yards this year is where he ended up finishing. Malik Nabers, seventh, and Brock Bowers tied with CeeDee Lamb for eighth.
It's incredible.
And Brock Bowers third in the NFL in receptions.
But Jaden will win. I just thought that was an interesting little conversation between Kornheiser and Wilbon, where I'm like, okay, maybe I'm a little too close to the sun. Really? You think you would vote for Brock Bowers? Wow.
Because you can't do that, though. You can't be like, well, I got two guys tied at the top, so let me put this third guy above both of them. So, like, you don't do that.
So stupid. All right, let's start with MVP real quick. Want to do this? Let's do this.
Let's do this. We should have gotten Elliot Bowman out here, producer of By the Books, before us, because, oh, man, I haven't heard Elliot so feisty morning, saying that these odds are so off Lamar Jackson should not be plus 350.
He's right. They're completely off. Josh Allen's minus 470. Ballots have to go in here now. The season is over. The regular season is a regular season award. Josh Allen minus 470, Lamar Jackson plus 350. Saquon is 75-1, by the way, third spot in the betting market. There's no world in which Josh Allen should be minus 470 and Lamar Jackson plus 350. Again, the objective take is that both have had spectacular seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they do both play the same position. And so if you believe they've both had great seasons, you do have to rely on some kind of objective analysis, right? And Lamar Jackson has the fifth highest passer rating in a season ever, 119.63. The first ever with 40-plus touchdown passes and fewer than five interceptions in a season, 41-4. He's the first ever 4,000-yard passer and 800-yard rusher. He ended up with 41-72 and 9-15, respectively. And he leads the NFL, and he led the NFL in touchdown percentage, air yards per attempt, net air yards per attempt, so on and so on. Plus, when they played head-to-head, the Ravens crushed the Bills. He won a division that was much harder, I believe, the AFC North is, than the AFC East. And, oh, by the way, their schedule, you know, riffing on that, is way, we talked about this a little yesterday, way more difficult than the Bills was.
Yep.
So, again, if you want to vote for Josh Allen, that's obviously you're right, and that's you're entitled to that opinion. But what I objected to is when I posted those stats for Lamar Jackson on Saturday after the Ravens game, you have a fringe Josh Allen nut job, you know, sect that is like, oh, get over it, it's over. If you think it's not, if you think it's over and that it's not even close, I don't even know what to tell you. I just listed historic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the reason in the end is that some of these voters, yeah, we just don't want to give it to him a third time, that's as brain dead as what we were just talking about with the Rookie of the Year and Kornheiser.
I mean, look, I think it's a little bit of a feel thing, because I think you've done a great job bringing this up multiple times this season. It's the, when you watch these two teams, who does it feel like is just feel, and it's a feel thing, yes. Who does it just feel like is their entire offense? And it is Josh Allen.
I do concede that point the entire time. If you were doing it literally, and you're like, well, if you remove that person from the team, what's the record of the team? You're right, Josh Allen. The Bills probably win two games.
Yeah, but like the Jokic like comparisons just are so ridiculous, and I think there is a little bit of voter fatigue going on. It's just so silly that we have to talk about this ever when we're worried about these awards bets. But
we're gonna have Aaron Schatz on tomorrow.
Can't wait to hear what he's going to say.
He's one of the 50.
And we're doing our Numbers Game Awards show either tomorrow or Thursday, depending on
when
I get
explain to folks what that is.
Well, we got all the regular guests here on a Numbers Game to contribute on who they would have winning each of these awards. So not who do they think is going to win, but who would they have winning if they actually had to submit a ballot. So we'll run through all of this.
So Fezzik will be voting, Drew Didsick will be voting, Will Hill will be voting, all of our regulars will be voting on this, plus you and me.
That's right. JVT, Will, Jason, Felica, Fezzik.
So Josh Allen, minus 470, Lamar Jackson, plus 350. I don't know who's going to win, but I'm just telling you, Josh Allen shouldn't be minus 470.
Yeah, I'm okay with Josh Allen. I feel like I've said this 3 weeks in a row. Very okay with Josh Allen being the favorite. I think he's probably going to win. But these odds are
I don't know if he's going to win or not. I really don't. Because Sando, last time he was on, he's a voter too, right? He was all about Lamar. He said Allen was narrowing the gap. So I don't know.
The one I'll bring up before Drew comes on, because I heard it on the deep dive. I can't remember if Drew or Andy said it. I think one of the other things that I've changed my mind on, and I agree with them, what they said with this was, okay, if we talk about this 5-6 weeks ago, it looked like the Ravens still may have a shaky finish to the season, right? And the records might be drastically different. But you're talking about a one-win difference with these two, a one-game difference with these two in the standings. And you're not talking about the Bills being a one seed, right? So you're not talking about a team that a quarterback led this team to a dominant regular season in a conference, because the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes are still two games clear of them in the standings.
For coach of the year, do you want to know what Barnwell's top three were?
Sure. I mean, I can't make fun of this. I mean, we've brought this up all year. I don't even know what they are.
Number three was Jim Harbaugh, Chargers. Okay. Number two, Kevin O'Connell of the Vikings. And number one, he gives it to Dan Campbell. Sean Payton nowhere to be found in his top three.
I don't have a problem with that. I was typing up the odds this morning, Gillian.
15-2 is 15-2.
You know what I was shaking my head at? I'm like, Dan Quinn. Like, your guy, Dan Quinn. Just like, what an amazing job, and he's not even going to sniff it.
Because he's an offensive coach, and Jaden Daniels is you
Who
know.
Who cares? That entire well, team has changed. I don't think that Dan entire Quinch... franchise is different than what it was a year ago.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody's like, it's because of Dan Quinn, necessarily. The defense has been sort of choppy.
Sure, but we all thought it was going to be like one of the worst in the league. They got a little bit better throughout the season.
Oh, they're way better than some people say they are. They're way more middling than people. Some people are like, they're terrible on defense. They're not terrible on defense. There's a lot of these are interesting. Comeback player of the year, you'll be happy. Sam Darnold, nowhere to be found. He's got Tony Jefferson, a safety of the Chargers, 3, J.K. Dobbins, 2, and Joe Burrow, 1.
Well, that means it's someone who's following the rules.
Someone who's following the rules.
Yeah.
Defensive rookie of the year. You know who's going to be happy? My Dolphins friend Reza. Kalen Bullock of the Texans, 3, Jared Verse, 2, and Chop Robinson, 1.
There we go.
He's
All
voting
right.
Chop.
So, dude, I think that one's still up in the air. I think defensive player is still up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, these are kind of fascinating. Anyway, I just think it's one of these years where do any of us know how any of these are going to go?
I mean, like, Patrick Sertan's still up there at, like, minus 700? Is anybody for certain that's happening?
Oh, I should check out what Barwell had for that. 3JackH3131 tweets, and Gil, speaking of MVP, is Puka worth a flyer at 200-1 for Super Bowl MVP? Well, that's a whole different conversation.
Ooh.
We'll get into that. Drew is next, right here on The Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Oh, look at that bottle. Look at that. Look at that, Kelly. Sewell's Barbecue Sauce. Southern hospitality never tasted so good. If you're ready to take your tailgate to the next level, you got to try Sewell's. Born from a backyard cookout in a mason jar of unforgettable flavor, Sewell's has become a Southern favorite, delighting taste buds from Georgia to the Carolinas. From smoky ribs to mouth-watering wings to the perfect backyard burger, Sewell's turns every bite into a flavor-packed experience. Order now at sewellsbarbecuesauce.com. That's SewellsBBQSauce.com. Flavor this good, just a click away. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin alongside. Before we get to Drew, real quick, let me just... for the sake of thoroughness, get through the rest of Bill Barnwell's 3-2-1 on all of these. Defensive player of the year.
Right.
Defensive player of the year. This may surprise folks.
Nothing surprises me in this market.
In this particular market, right. 3, Zach Bond, Eagles. 2, Patrick Sertan, Broncos. 1, Trey Hendrickson, Bengals. He's going to vote for Hendrickson.
So this is where Hendrickson screws up everything here. He's 3.5 sacks clear of the rest of the field. So when we want to talk Watt, you want to talk Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
Hendrickson is there 3.5 sacks clear, but you can't possibly give it to Trey Hendrickson when we've talked about the Bengals all year and the only thing that's held them back is their defense.
Hendrickson's not even listed in this market.
Not even listed.
Not even listed.
Or he's longer than 75-1.
Sertan, who, by the way, those of us a certain age remember his dad. His dad was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
He's Patrick Sertan II, minus 500, TJ Watt plus 850. Everybody else double digits. Andrew Van Ginkle is actually the next one.
That's what I brought up yesterday. Yeah. I really wanted to see what happened in this market if Van Ginkle grabbed that interception and took it back for 6.
That's all it takes sometimes with some of these guys. Offensive player of the year. This is from Barnwell. 3, Derrick Henry. 2, Ja'Marr Chase. 1, Saquon. No surprise there. And then I didn't mention how he had MVP stacked up, right? He has Saquon 3rd. And then he did a whole long dissertation about Lamar versus Josh Allen. And he ends up with Josh Allen 2, Lamar Jackson 1. Drew Dinsick joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, Dinsick Classic. Which, by the way, Drew, let me just say, I have heard more buzz about The Deep Dive this year than any year. People love the repartee between you and Andy. And then, of course... NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jay Croucher. No, seriously, man, people love the deep dive. You should get your, as the kids say, your flowers for such a thing.
Awesome. Well, that's great to hear. Yeah. I mean, it's if you didn't already know, It's basically a passion project. Nobody's paying us to do that.
Yeah.
We're just doing it because we love to chop it up. And it's honestly a huge part of my process. Once you say stuff out loud, you kind of hear if it's smart or stupid. And it's like, oh, I thought I had an edge here, but now that I have to defend it in front of Andy, who's a very pragmatic individual, I feel like I maybe made a bad bet. And so, yeah, that's sort of the nature of the program. And I love it.
I want to hold off the awards and your Super Wildcard Weekend thoughts to the second segment. I want to get through a couple other sports.
I got to clear up something real quick. I screwed up. Speaking of stupid, Hendrickson is listed. He is plus 850 right next to Watt.
Okay. That's a noteworthy omission there. Okay.
I mean, guys, did you see what he did? He stopped the mighty Russell Wilson. if you're going to give credit to the 3.5 sacks he got on Saturday, like, I mean, we're going to give Russell Wilson a vote himself because he walked into a few of those sacks. My goodness. What this is, just these awards markets. Sometimes what they hinge on at the very end of seasons is so ridiculous. And I have no idea who wins Defensive Player of the Year. It's probably going to be like a monster split vote, and it's going to come down to, you know, where, you know, second and third place, how many ballots you're on there. And so Surtain probably wins because he may get a lot of second place votes. But absolutely ridiculous. I do think Watt is drawing dead, though. And I don't agree that, he's still in the mix personally.
Yeah. Well, twist my arm. We'll talk about awards because it's so interesting to talk about. What's the one that would be the most outlying for you?
Most outlying? You mean like
based on the market? Based on the market, like what's the most off market Drew Dinsick vote at, if you had a vote?
Well, I think Lamar is not priced correctly.
I agree.
There's like a weird thing happening right now where everybody is kind of really hemming and hawing and like searching my soul. What do I do? You know, and I think that there is like a weird thing happening where there's an expectation because of what the odds are that Josh Allen is going to win. So that's almost giving license to people to do what they think is more popular, which is vote for Lamar. I'm not even sure I'm explaining this right, but it feels like this bizarro dynamic where people like want to be on the cool side of the discussion, so they're going to vote for Lamar, but they think that's okay because Josh is just going to win. And I think that's going to create a scenario where this comes down to like, I just think it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be very close to 50-50. And there is a absolutely bizarre relationship between the odds markets and what the voters do in all of these awards.
Agree.
That is, it has become so entangled that you almost have to like think like, are the voters looking at the odds and saying, I'm not going to do that because I don't agree? Or are they looking at the odds and saying, well, if that's just what's going to happen, then I'm going to do something different for my award because I want this to be at least part of the discussion, or I want to make sure it's closer, so I'm going to put Lamar first. Like,
Or are they looking at the odds at all? We don't know.
I'm sure there are like 10 or 15 that are just completely divorced from that entirely. Yep. But there are certainly like 20 to 25 of the 50 voters who live on social media still and like have a very, very internet brain kind of experience with all of these votes. And it's going to be very close.
That's what makes the betting so interesting, right? Because there's no real world sports betting where up to the gun here, you can bet on something like Lamar Jackson at plus 350, right? And think to yourself, oh, I got a legit shot here.
Yeah. I think, and I guess, so two thoughts then. That Lamar, it should be, I just think it should be closer to 50-50 because I don't know that it's this clear cut. And
I agree.
And again, like with my imaginary vote, I voted for Josh Allen last year. So with my imaginary vote this year, I can vote for Lamar Jackson with a clean conscience, guys. But I will say that like this one, I don't know what's going to happen. I would say 51-49, Josh. And so if you're going to say, well, if you think that's how the votes exist now with no new information, then Josh Allen might as well be minus 1,000 because he's just going to win. If you think he's going to win by a very, very small margin or win by a large margin, the price shouldn't change, right? But I don't have high confidence that he's gonna win this one. And if he wins, I think it's gonna be by an absolutely razor thin margin. The other one that I think is mispriced is Coach of the Year. I don't think Kevin O'Connell's got this at all.
Who would you vote for?
I would vote for Dan Quinn, but I think Dan Campbell's gonna scoop this.
So the bet you think Dan Campbell is going to win, but I think
he's gonna win.
You would vote Dan Quinn. I'm a Washington guy and I wouldn't vote Dan Quinn. That's interesting to me.
I look at Coach of the Year literally as like, what have you done with, you know, what have you done with the pieces that you were given? I don't understand how Dan Quinn did this. I don't. I bet the only awards bet that I'm really going to take home serious.
I got two words for you. I know that was rhetorical, but I do have two words. Sure. The first Daniels, word is sure. Jaden, and sure. The second is Daniels. Yes.
Sure. So you remember him, if you go back to the tape a million years ago, what's your favorite awards bet? It was Jaden Daniels for Offensive Rookie of the Year at 7-1. And the reasoning was like super straightforward, which was the margin between him and Caleb is not that great. And Jaden Daniels is going to be on this team with this defense that can't stop anyone. And so he's going to have lots of garbage time to rack up yards and like, you know, and he's got the rushing component. So like his statistical profile is going to be gaudy. And then sure enough, yeah, he does exceed expectations in every stretch, you know, in every definition of the word. But I cannot believe what Dan Quinn did and his influence on the personnel they brought, like all of the C team from the Cowboys defense over, all those guys like played well. And just in general, like the kind of stewardship of that franchise being functional was notable. And they turned over the entire roster and he got it done. So I think he deserves more consideration.
I'm saying it's a great job. Frankie Louvu, Dante Fowler. I mean, there's been a couple guys on this defense that have been unbelievably awesome and it's not really recognized nationally. But is that more impressive? I'm just being real here. Is that more impressive as, again, we just went through Bill Barnwell. He doesn't even have Sean Payton as top three. No one dislikes Sean Payton as a human more than I do. But he drafted Bo Nix. We all mocked it. He coached Bo Nix up. I mean, the improvement that he showed, Nix. I mean, Peyton, to me, is as worthy as anybody for this.
I don't disagree, but I also think that the Broncos and their success was somewhat schedule-based, much more so than what Peyton did as coach. And like, if it's not Quinn, who exceeded my expectations the most for me was the Washington defense, the Washington team, and Quinn deserves some recognition. Campbell also deserves recognition because his specific decision-making, his fourth down aggressiveness, his ability to lead that team, took them to the one seed when they were not the most talented team in the NFC, in my opinion.
15-2 is 15-2. By the way, Washington had a pretty easy schedule too, when you put it all in the wash as well. Okay, we'll get some tennis thoughts, we'll get some basketball thoughts, and some Super Wild Card Weekend thoughts from Drew. Bets ahead, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're getting ready for Big Game 59. With a big deal to match. Save $59 off a VSiN Pro annual subscription when you sign up using promo code ANG. Become a VSiN Pro annual subscriber. Bet smarter all year long with full access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access, and of course, all our betting guides and expert picks for the Super Bowl and upcoming March Madness. Don't miss out on this big game deal. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code ANG.
Promo code ANG as in A Numbers Game, Gil.
To save $59 off a VSiN Pro annual subscription today, that's VSiN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Kevin Ryan, Gil, speaking about Tony Kornheiser, most people don't know that when he gave up his morning time slot on ESPN, he was replaced by a guy nobody knew, Colin Cowherd. Shrek, Hendrickson 14-1 right now. LOL, DPOY, wherever he's looking.
Yeah, Shaw Barone.
Colin Murphy, I did a deep dive on the Defensive Player of the Year award the other day. As far as Hendrickson goes, the only player to win the award on a losing team since 2000 was Jason Taylor in 2006. You familiar with his sister at all?
Yeah.
However, they had the fifth-ranked defense. The Bengals ranked 28th. New York Mets 16. Why is Bengals D a negative for Hendrickson when we were railing for Wemby and his team's miserable D? Trey's the only guy on that D, and he's 2.5 sacks clear. What else is he supposed to do? Rick Ollier, award show. Will there be speeches? If so, hopefully Fezzik wins something. I'd love to hear him thanking everyone by telling them they're all stupid for not driving 15 miles for a free donut hole from O'Shea's or any other similar advantage play. Just kidding. We all love Fez. And finally, Mike C. Don't we have to remember that Josh Allen was nowhere to be found against Lamar? Love all the feedback. I leave them all without comment.
I will say, to tease the award show whenever we get there, to no one's surprise, I did get multiple ballots back that included certain awards next to it, just written, I have no clue, put the favorite or whatever you
want.
Oh,
wow.
Just because they're angry about it.
Glad to see that our guests have really bought into our little award show.
I believe it was, I believe the two awards I saw that for were Defensive Player of the Year and Comeback Player of the Year.
Well, they're right. Drew Dinsick joins us once again at @whale_capper on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, Deep Dive, yes, and of course, Bet the Edge podcasts. But we were just having a conversation off air. Like, it does get ridiculous if you're listing three, and at one point, apparently, they thought about five Comeback Player of the Years in a list. It's like, come on.
Yeah, it is. And not to spoil it, but thank you, Kelly, for giving me a vote in the awards show. And yes. I haven't submitted mine yet because I'm agonizing over who to put fifth for Comeback Player of the Year.
Right.
But yeah, the narratives that swirl around this is so insane. And yeah, it's endless content. It's fun to talk about.
Well, let's try to put an end to it. Let's move on to Super Wild Card Weekend. What have you bet?
I mean, all these prices look fair to me, Gil. All right, that's a wrap. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. There's a lot that I'm not really kind of getting here. Mostly it's totals. In general, I think the totals opened far too high. There was like a little bit of a, when we're at the end of the season and none of the games matter, and there was an offensive explosion to end the season. I think that kind of set the benchmark for what kind of a median total should be, a little bit high. At least that's my guess as to what was going on here, because there's not like a ton of weather to be concerned about here. But I bet basically I think I have every under except for the Bills Broncos in pocket. The biggest mover, of course, was the Steelers Ravens. I got 45.5 there. That's down to 44. I still think that's too high. That's maybe the game I have the strongest opinion on, just because I feel like there's one unit that there's one matchup between offense and defense that you can say, like, yeah, like, I know what's going to happen here. This is going to be like a 10-point output for the Steelers offense. And so if the Steelers cover, it's because the Steelers defense holds the Ravens to 17. And, I think there's pretty kind of minor scope in the absence of Zay Flowers for the Baltimore Ravens to just go absolute ham and put 31 up on the Steelers here. And so, it's funny to me that this is out to 10, considering we just had this market open 5, close 7, and then like we've learned that much more about the Ravens and the Steelers since then. Like, we knew the Steelers and the Ravens were a touchdown apart. Now it's 10.
Yeah.
And in the interim, we've lost Zay Flowers. I'm assuming Zay Flowers is out. I know that that's not a confirmed, but I'd be blown away if he plays in this game. We know that George Pickens will be back, although one can argue that's a minus for the total. I think ultimately this is pretty clearly like last stand for the Steelers defense. Their pass rush is solid. They're going to be able to at least disrupt the passing game, particularly in the absence of Zay Flowers. And so this comes down to the Ravens putting this thing away on the ground and eating the clock. And I can't get anywhere close to 44. So I still think that's the biggest edge, even though it's already moved a point and a half.
Okay. And nary aside, I didn't hear you say you're taking the Steelers plus the points.
No, but I will acknowledge that that is the correct side from a math standpoint. Okay. I think there's better ways to attack that, honestly.
Yeah.
Like Ravens team total under is a way to kind of mirror that, but you're kind of, number one, you're protected from a push, and number two, you're protected from a Ravens defense just flat out shutting out the Steelers. Like Russell Wilson, we were making a joke in the last segment, like he is staring at the pass rush like it is like coming to eat him. and his the interior of the offensive line for the Steelers has completely eroded. The tackle play is poor right now. Like, that's sort of not being digested beyond just people are looking, oh, Steelers collapse, let's talk about Mike Tomlin, another late season collapse, let's like all of the narrative is missing the fact that the offensive line is getting absolutely blown away, and the gimmicks and the sleight of hand that was helping Russell Wilson succeed through the middle of the season has been found out. And you know who generally learns? Opponents that you face multiple times a season, who are chewing on the tape constantly, who have just played you, just prepared for you. So yeah, I could see a world where the Steelers get shut out here, and in that case your plus 10 is drawing dead, much like it was last year against the Bills.
I'm with you. I guessed 7.5, and I love the Ravens, but I thought 10 is ridiculous. Also, I also like when you do the dumb voice, how you put the arms in as well.
I enjoy that. So game under, Drew, right? That's what that all
called. Game under. But I would also say, like, if you want the free points with the Steelers, parlay with the under, because I honestly, like, the Steelers are not covering the 10 because they have an offensive renaissance and they get to 23. It's not happening. I'm sorry.
Tennis really quick. We just came from Brisbane. Sure. Now we're in Adelaide. Now we're going to Melbourne. To Melbourne for the Aussie Open. I are doing a pre-draw pod on the Australian Open tomorrow. Thank you for joining me for that. Do you have any plays in Adelaide later today?
No, I take this week off. I'm still really trying to evaluate the state of players. The match and the player that is the most interesting to me this week is surely young Ben Shelton. His serve and his style and his kind of progression at the age he is in his career is one of these years he will pop at the Australian Open and like be, oh, wait a minute, this guy's a top four player. Like, it's going to happen one year and it could be this year. And I'm very excited to see him in Adelaide. If you want any kind of action this week, I would just back his outright in Adelaide, which is like plus 360 or something like that. I think in general, like the women's draw is going to matter the most because there are probably 10 women who have a realistic chance to ship this. But that said, like the way you sort and order the top, Coco Gauff now the second choice for me after what she did in week one. Sabalenka still the favorite, but pretty narrow margin between them and the next six comers.
J-Rod wants to know, famous Iga fan, he wants to know, it's 5-1 on Iga to win the Australian Open. What do you think is fair?
My number is not that favorable, honestly. I'm in the 650 range, and it's mostly just because of you once you parse out, you know, all of the people who have more than a 5% chance to win, the pot is just, it's pretty small. And yeah, she's going to need a god draw to really change to make 5-1 bet on, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll find out the draw here our state time Thursday night. Zach Cohen and I will do the post-draw part of that podcast Friday morning. All right, Drew, real quick, NBA, we got a minute. What do you got tonight?
Well, as you noted earlier, hitting the espresso pretty hard this morning because I was up late last night watching my Heat plus 3.5 go down in second overtime in Sacramento. I'm so angry. I woke up this morning and the first thing I did was bet the Golden State Warriors. I know it's an enormous number, but if this Heat team can even get out of bed, good on them. They are very shorthanded. This is a nasty fatigue spot for them against a Warriors team that's pretty well rested and fairly deep, even though they don't have any star power outside of Steph Curry. So yes, I bet the Warriors -9. I also have the Atlanta Hawks -6 on the road. They are actually kind of a sneaky underpriced team right now by market. I don't know if you've noticed, but there's been an enormous leap in the quality of play of Mr. Hunter, who is he's come on strong in the sixth man of the year market as well as the most improved market. And in general, I think the Hawks can pretty much win, you know, pick the score here. And then lastly, I took the points with the... Sorry, I lost my spot.
All right.
I bet one of the dogs today. Oh, I bet the Pelicans. Yikes. Yuck. Why did I do that? I took the points on the Pelicans.
I'm looking at that one, too.
No wonder you forgot. Oh,
gross.
Thank you, Drew. Looking forward to talking more NBA with you in the coming weeks.
All right. Best of luck, guys.
Drew Dinsick on the Australian Open pre-draw pod with me tomorrow. Todd Wright next with all his super wild card thoughts.
Oh,
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You the kind of player who wants to drop $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price in the market? Or maybe you're looking for instant acceptance on your in-game bets? Well, you need Sport Trade, the app that's revolutionizing sports betting. Minus 104 lines instead of the standard minus 110, instant in-game betting, and a dedicated concierge player service. Sport Trade delivers a premium betting experience like no other. Now live in New Jersey, Colorado, Iowa, Arizona, and Virginia. Download Sport Trade today. Use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on every wager during your first week. Terms apply. Got to be 21 years or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Skill Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. I'm a reasonable man, but I will not be debated on this subject. He's the greatest sports talk radio host that ever lived. The host of All Night with Todd Wright back in the day on ESPN Radio. Of course, had other gigs nationally after that, but I know him most from that, from sitting in my car after the old Love Zone slow jamming until wee hours of the morning because I couldn't tear myself away. It's the great Todd Wright, everybody, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Has multiple podcasts. Todd Wright Toddcast, Fantasy Football Podcast, Survivor Podcast. How you doing, Todd? Good to talk to you.
Gil, thanks for always being one of my best ambassadors from my full-time radio days. And good morning, Kelly. Nice to be on with both of you.
Oh, it's very nice of you. Listen, I want to give you your props before the season. You called all eight division winners. You were 8-for-8 on division winners.
Whoa.
And how many wild cards did you miss?
The only wild cards I missed, and let me know if you know anyone who had these to complete the 14, were Denver and Washington. I had Cincinnati in, and I had San Francisco, but as a wild card. So those were the only ones. We did a Todd Wright Toddcast annually right before the season started. It posted 4 months ago yesterday, all eight division winners and every wild card except Denver and Washington.
I might have had Washington, but I'd have to check the tape. But it would have been a total homer call on my part. So I don't really deserve credit. Yeah.
To be quite honest. I've heard how Gil said it, Todd.
What's that?
If he did, it was a total homer
total
pick
homer
and he doesn't
call.
Deserve any credit.
None whatsoever. Let's also sort of bring up what also within sort of the props category. But it was this interesting call that you made at the beginning of the season. If I remember correctly, it was before the Rams-Lions Sunday night football game to start the season. Could you remind us of what that was?
Yeah, because as a listener of yours, and I text you occasionally, and I just felt very strongly, and obviously, you know, I felt Detroit would win the NFC North despite a lot of chatter about Green Bay. I did have Minnesota with Sam Darnold being a factor. I said we'd know pretty early in the year if Darnold was going to do in 2024 for his career what Baker did in 2023. I believed in him, but I believed in the Rams more than I believed in the Niners, thinking the Niners window was closing, thinking that the window was still open for McVay and for Stafford in Los Angeles and with some good young guys in their front seven. And I just said to you, I said, I think the winner of this first Sunday night game between the Rams and the Lions is going to host the NFC Championship game. And here we are, just, you know, 2.5 weeks from the NFC Championship game. And there the Lions are just sitting there one game away from hosting the NFC Championship game. Who knows? Maybe against the Rams, who they played in week one. They might have the Rams in the divisional round. It depends on what happens in the other games.
Yeah, and I do think the Rams are sort of the sneaky team in the NFC as well. All right, so super wild card weekend, six games. Is there a line that you think is the most exploitable of all of them?
To me, the start of the weekend and the end of the weekend. So Houston in their traditional, oh, the playoffs are on already spot. that early Saturday, that's amazing. Eight times they played in that spot in this in the wild card weekend. Yeah, I just can't make a strong case for Houston here. Even though this is, you know, this is new to this group with the Chargers. I love that the Chargers have Dobbins back. And from the running back standpoint, in a year where also this is the fantasy side of me talking, the running back struck back, to sort of draw from an old Star Wars term. Where has Joe Mixon been the last month? You know, for a time there, Joe Mixon was phenomenal this year in fantasy football and for the Texans. And the last month, it just hasn't been there. If Mixon is not a factor in that game against the Chargers, a team that emphasizes ball control, running the ball, I don't know that Houston is in this game. So I can't make a strong case for Houston there. I'm with those that are on the side of the Chargers, and I feel pretty good about it, even if it gets, you know, it's gone from what, 2.5 to 3, I would go up to 4 with it. And then the Rams on the other side of the weekend, I know that number's come down a little bit, a reaction to what Minnesota didn't do, particularly in the red zone, and then how the game got away from them late. But I feel pretty good. I think McVay knows his personnel. He rested Stafford. He rested Nacua. He rested Williams. He doesn't need to rest any of these young guys on defense. I just don't know that, as good as Minnesota was all year, that they are ready for prime time and that they could go a quick out with that Sunday night loss and then a Monday night loss in the playoffs. So I do like the Rams getting the points at home.
As you are one that we always talk fantasy with, and then you have a Survivor podcast as well, let me sort of gravitate towards those for a second. One, since you bring up Mixon and how he was a great fantasy player earlier this year, who are the top three, like going into next year's fantasy drafts, who are the top three consensus, would you say, next year?
Well, I'll just say for this year, people that passed on Barkley, Henry, and Chase were kicking themselves all year. Now, ironically, fantasy players that had them, they all had like a bad week the same week, and it might have cost them winning a fantasy championship. But with the running backs being so resurgent this past year, and we got to put Josh Jacobs in that category as well, I think you'll see more of a push toward, hey, let's not ignore the obvious running back. Because, Gil, this past year, you had people in one breath saying, Derrick Henry is going to lead the NFL in touchdowns, and in the same breath saying, but I'm not taking him as my RB1. I mean, it's either one or the other. And Derrick Henry was that guy on the front end for the Baltimore Ravens. So I'll just say that about it for next year. I haven't looked that far ahead. I'm just still, and you know this, Gil, I'm thrilled that 2 years ago, going into the 2023 fantasy season, and you know I rule my leagues with an iron fist.
Yes,
again,
I do.
Your term, not mine. I stopped playing fantasy football in week 17. There was just, we started to lose integrity a couple of years ago with big time players. Why is the fantasy championship need to be determined in week 17? We moved it off week 18 years ago. 2 years ago, I said, we're not doing week 17 anymore. So I was thrilled, and all my players were thrilled. We got done in 16 weeks because obviously you and Kelly and everyone dealt with, well, who's playing, who's not playing, who's playing a full game, who's not playing a full game in week 17, and my fantasy leagues were done.
I brought this up and gave you credit for it a couple of weeks ago. I think people are going to follow suit, and I think it's going to end up being the consensus that fantasy championships are going to be moved up 1 week when all is said and done.
Well, two of this year, right? I mean, isn't that the ultimate example now, where you had to have lineup set way early in the week? You had no idea on Tua, and if you were planning on going to war with him in your championship, you lost.
It's a bunch of that, you know? And then what's this other quirk you have before you go here, Todd? You played Survivor. What's this quirk you had in your Survivor League? 25% set aside for what?
75% of the entry fee goes towards the winners of our Survivor League. There were two that made it through all 18 weeks, so they split 75% of the money. But in addition to your week one Survivor play, you were asked to submit your Super Bowl winner. And 25% of the money goes to the Super Bowl winner. So I chose the Rams, feeling not a lot would choose them. And I felt good about the Rams at least being in the mix, because so many had Kansas City last year. They basically just rolled over their money this year to discount their entry. So I'm like, all right, I get that. Let's find somebody else. So I'm one of six of near 500 who are on the Rams for a six-way chop if the Rams win the Super Bowl. Of note, Gil, there is one on Washington in our pool. There is one on Washington. There is no one on Denver, but that's the quirk. The 25% of the money goes to your Super Bowl pick. So that was the thing I told you about. There's like eight on the Bucks, six on the Rams, four on the Chargers, two on Minnesota, one on Washington. I think that's the breakdown, other than the obvious ones.
All of that aside, if I asked you, Todd Wright, human being, who do you think's in the Super Bowl right now, your answer would be?
Uh, can I just say, I don't think the Chiefs, Lions, or Ravens win the Super Bowl. So I'm very active in the futures market, looking ahead at the best values of other teams, because I don't think the Chiefs, Lions, or Ravens win the Super Bowl, which opens up a lot of possibilities. Obviously, I do have a ticket on the Rams. I may jump in on the Bills, depending on what's going on, if it's Bills at Kansas City. But yeah, I don't think Chiefs, Lions, or Ravens are winning it this year, Gil. That's just me.
Todd, I appreciate it, man. Great talking to you, as always.
Always great being on with you. Love to listen.
Thank you, sir. Todd Wright, everybody, right here on the Progressive Guest Line. Will Hill on the other side. All of his bets, college and pro football next.